Well, good afternoon, brethren. I was almost mesmerized by the special music that I almost forgot who was speaking. Thank you so very, very much, those that presented, the Steve Huco, Mrs. Roybal, and the Hoovers. This is just another typical ho-hum musical performance that we have in Eagle Rock. Just untalented people doing their best. No, they did a beautiful job. We are very, very blessed to have them and to hear them today. Today, as you've heard no less than 15 times, this is the Day of Trumpets. It is Yom Teruah, and if you heard the shofar blow, it is a very special day. It is the Yom Teruah is defined as the Day of the Trumpet. Has been said, the United Church of God believes this is a high holy day. It is a part of God's plan of salvation, that the trumpet will indeed sound, the dead in Christ are raised to new life, and those that are alive. He does return as a king, and we heard that expounded in the first message. The day is therefore critical to our prophetic understanding of salvation, both personally and collectively. It is a sure doctrine of the church. It is therefore inviolate. In other words, it cannot be changed. But at its core is the act of the resurrection. At its core, the dead and the living are changed, and they are changed forever. So let me ask you a question. What are all of you doing here on a Thursday at 11 a.m. in the morning? You surely have other things to do. Letters were written to bosses and to schools that you would be off today. On your voicemail, hopefully on your phone and in your emails, please, I will get back to you by tomorrow. I will be gone today. You gave no explanation, because if you did, no one would understand what you were doing. But allow me to take you back in time just for a moment. I want you to picture yourself in your car. You've come to an intersection and you see a policeman with his white gloved hand in the middle of the street directing traffic. He's got his whistle in the other hand. And he's waving those white-gloved hands in different directions, showing traffic moving this way, stopping that way. You notice, however, there are no signals at all. They're not there. There are no signs whatsoever. You also notice your car has no radio, no glass windows. There is dust and dirt blowing through your car. And you realize that this is happening because the road itself is dirt. And you're driving a Model T. You're in the year 1908. And you realize right then and there you could really go for a Red Bull. But they haven't been invented yet. Think how your car has changed. Now, I'm not sure how many of us in the audience, please no raise of hands, who were driving a car in 1908. I hope no one in this audience. But we have all seen the pictures. We've all seen the movies. Many of us have seen the car. How life has changed. It's important that we understand that if this occurred today, there's no policeman because there's signals. There's signals and signs everywhere. And the signals seem to be set by some city engineer while they were inebriated, at least where I live. I mean, is that an amen or what? Who controls and sets these things? There's signals everywhere. But you wouldn't hear the policeman anyway, because you can't hear him because you have your four-zone AC on with your 16-speaker Bose sound system with music assist interrupted by your sync control and rear camera warning beeping. How has it changed? The front seat of your car was better than most recording studios 50 years ago. I'm doing some research on my dad, who was involved in racing, in the 1930s, over at the original Ascot. None of you have been there because it burned down in 1936. And they built the cars then from the ground up, and they put together pieces, the steering wheels were from one car, the front end, an engine from another, the tail, the wheels, the tires from others. They were basically handmade. The drivers had little or no protection, and many died. They were ejected from the cars because seat belts hadn't been invented yet. They wore a leather cap for their heads, for their helmets. It was really a leather strap. Later it changed, and now they are indeed better equipped than the car you drive. Let me give you an example. This is basically what they had around their head, protecting it, something about that thin. It was basically a covering. We're not sure why. The goggles they had were glass. This is what they wear today. This puppy. Little bit of a change from this to this. In fact, they wear certain suits. Now, I'm not going to put these on, but this is just the underwear suit, the fireproof suit that they wear, gloves, boots. They're all specially made. Mr. Price Movius was kind enough to give me these props. We were trying to figure out for the translation, how do you say the word prop in Spanish? I found out it's not el propos. So I'm not sure how they're translating this. This is el glovos. I have no idea how they're translating this. Thank you. Thank you. But you can see the difference, the change. And I couldn't have asked for a better introduction to this message than the music that we just heard. It was all about change. And that's what this day is about, change. We see change all around us. It happens all around us. Look at your phone. Smartphone. Yeah, I know how old I am. I have a smartphone. There's not a whole lot this thing can't do. But 15 years ago, there was a cord on it. And you were tethered basically to home in most cases. But you can see in our everyday life, even in this driving example. And by the way, how many of you have ever seen Price Movius drive his car? And a few of you have. Still extremely dangerous. I remember we went to see him one evening, and my two boys went with me, and he is going around this dirt track in this sprint car. It was really something to see. I don't mean to diverge too much, but it was still very, very dangerous. Dirt track, I don't know how fast they were going at that time, and I remember one of my sons leaned over and said, "Daddy, is Mr. Movius in that thing?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Movius is in that thing." And it was unbelievably dangerous, but still the massive change in technology, even in our short lifetime. And today, what I'd like to do is visit a subject that we've been studying in Eagle Rock through the book of Ecclesiastes. Let me give it in a nutshell. Solomon speaks to a life that has definite briefness and vanity. It will not last. It is like a breath. In fact, that's what the word vanity truly means, a puff, a vapor. That is our lives. We do not know whether we will live long or live short, whether we will be rich or we will be poor, whether we'll be sick or we will be healthy. It is in God's hands and His hands alone. We have absolutely no control over it. The book and the idea is Ecclesiastes, but the subject that I'd like to address with you today in this life we live is the change that must occur. So my SPS is trumpets is resurrection, and resurrection is about change. Trumpets, therefore, says to the believer, change. In fact, change in order to be changed. It's expressed in the Greek word metamorphos, and that's the title of this message. Metamorphos means to change, meta, change, morpho, which is form. In character, both physically and internally. You will have many messages today on prophecy in this day of trumpets. But this particular message is directed specifically to you and to me. Please turn with me, if you would, where we will spend all of our time is in the book of Job. Now, you probably haven't heard Job referenced too many times in the day of trumpets. But I believe that two chapters in particular, all about the day of trumpets. The verses I wish to use today are highly debated in the theological community as to their context. The books are endless with the technical syntax gymnastics, which are way over my head, but they're fascinating nonetheless. I studied a number of references for this message, and I looked at Judaic. I even looked at Mormon literature. They have a tremendous amount to say about this book. as it relates to the resurrection, many of the commentaries that you and I all have in our libraries. The book of Job is well known to many, and it talks about at the core of the concept of resurrection. In chapter 19, and we're going to pick up the story in verse 13. Chapter 19, verse 13. But let me give you a little bit of background. The book of Job is considered the oldest piece of literature in the Bible. They don't know how old it is. We know it is what's called as pre-Solomonic, which means it was just before the time of Solomon. With that said, it could be as old as 2000 BC in what's called the Chalcolithic period. It's old, very, very old, because of the phrases that are used, the site references. The patriarchs had the plan of God, I believe, but they had it in very vague, no detail. They understood it, but they did not have the understanding that we have. They could not possibly. It tells us in the New Testament that they longed to know the things that you know and that I know. And so as we read through this, I want you to remember and to understand that change at its basis level must occur. And Job brings this out. Job is suffering horrible loss. He's lost most of his family, his wealth, his respect, his health. He's covered with boils, and he doesn't understand really why. The why is another story, but he sees his mortality. He sees his bones pressing against his skin, and the boils he's scraping off with pieces of pottery. So keep this in your mind, if you would, as we read in chapter 19, picking it up in verse 13. He's talking about God here when he says he. He has removed my brothers far from me, and my acquaintances are completely estranged from me. My relatives have failed. My close friends have forgotten me. Those who dwell in my house and my maidservants count me as a stranger. I am an alien in their sight. I call my servant, but he gives no answer. I beg him with my mouth. My breath is offensive to my wife. I mean, yowie zowie. How bad can it get? And I am repulsive to the children of my own body. Even young children despise me. I rise, they speak against me. All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me. My bone clings to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped, this is where the phrase comes from, and I have escaped by the skin of my teeth. Have pity on me, have pity on me, O you my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. Why do you persecute me as God does, and are not satisfied with my flesh? It's important here is that he is almost rambling. He talks about his children. His children are gone. He lost his children. Everyone despises him. The three friends that he references, as we many of the names we know, Zophar, Eliphaz, and one of the shortest men in the Bible, Bildad. Sorry, I can't pass it up. Bildad the Shuhite, I know. They're making it worse. If you had friends like these, you have no friends. So he says, why you torment me like this? Isn't it bad enough that God is after me? And so he continues in verse 23. And here we have this vague type, antitype of a very, very particular event. Verse 23. Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book, that they were engraved on a rock with an iron pen and lead forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives. I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth after my skin is destroyed. This I know, that in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold and not another. How my heart yearns within me. These are beautiful, beautiful words. In verses 23 and 24, it's rather ironic. He says, oh, that my words were written. They were put in a book. Well, Job, they were. We're reading them. In millions of books, his words were inscribed, and people remember. He talks about the book, a book that will endure forever. It could be a vague representation of the book of life. He also says in verse 25, my Redeemer lives. The word Redeemer there is a very specific Hebrew word, Geol. It means an avenger. It is an incredibly important doctrine of the Bible. The concept is where one pays the debt for another, redeems them from slavery, It's best identified as God redeeming, as the Geol in Exodus. He is the avenger. He is the rescuer. It is the one that pulls them out of the pit. And Joel says in this vague type, he knows that this person lives and will redeem him. We who understand the New Testament, when we read the Old Testament, it should give us tremendous satisfaction in understanding what even Job did not understand in detail. But can we not, because of what we do know, appreciate it infinitely more? We do know the details, so when we read this, it is so important to understand. Verse 26 and 27 are very interesting. Whole books analyze the syntax of exactly what it means by flesh. It seems to say, "For I stand after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh or apart from my flesh, I shall see God." Something has changed. His skin is removed. It's gone. And so apart from his flesh, he says, "I shall see God. I shall see him." And so it's one of the earliest hints at the resurrection of a life after life, or a life after death. And those that have suffered and died and are God's, he redeems to a new life. Job gives no details here. They're merely raw facts. Death, then life, and seeing God. And he will see God himself. He says, it's an interesting verse, verse 27b, he says, "How my heart yearns within me for that day." In fact, the literal, it's not heart, it's the word in the Hebrew for kidneys. That was the seat of emotion. His whole body aches, it yearns for that day. He then warns his friends, he says, "Since the root of the matter is found in me," verse 29, "be afraid," talking to his friends, "of the sword for yourselves, for wrath brings the punishment of the sword, that you may know there is a judgment." And so we see this concept of the resurrection, the day that we talk about here today, the day that we commemorate as a singular point in time. The Day of Trumpets points forward to this day of change. Now let's move to chapter 14, where we're given much, much more detail. And the reason I give this to you in the order that I give it to you, to show you the change, the incredible change that occurs. Chapter 14, those of us, those in the ministry that do the fortunate, unfortunate task of funerals, I try and use Job chapter 14 and chapter 19 because of the things that it says. We understand the book of Corinthians about this change. But this is such an ancient book in Job, and it has such a pure and simple understanding of this day. That's why I use it. It says, verse 1, "Man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." All the women say amen. "He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue." Those of you that have read Ecclesiastes, this sounds like Ecclesiastes. Many scholars believe that Solomon took much of what he wrote in the book of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs from the book of Job. "Forth like a flower, he fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. And do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me to judgment with yourself? Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean thing?" The answer is rhetorically, God can. Not a human being. No human being. So he says, no one. "Since his," man's, "days are determined, the number of his months is with you, you have appointed his limits that he cannot pass. Look away from him that he may rest, till, like a hired man, he finishes his day." It talks about life. It talks about mankind. All of us are flesh. All of us, our days are numbered. The issue is, or the problem is, none of us know how many days we are given. We could be like Joe Young, who we recently lost, you recently lost in this congregation. He lived a long and a full life, did he not? There are others that God, for whatever reason, took, and he took them young. We do not know. We will not understand this side of the Day of Trumpets. And as Solomon writes, vanity of vanities, we are merely a breath, a vapor. Christ said we cannot add 1 inch to our height. We cannot add 1 day to our lives. It's not a desperate issue. It's just life. It's the way it is. It's the way God created it. And so we understand Job's roller coaster emotions here, his highs and his lows. And many of us, as Mr. Weber said in the offertory, many of us have experienced over the last year or 5 years unbelievable highs and unbelievable lows. So as we read this, understand Job. Verse 7. He gives an analogy here. He gives two analogies. He says, "For there is hope of a tree if it is cut down, that it will sprout again, and that its tender shoots will not cease. Though its root may grow old in the earth, and its stump may die in the ground, yet the scent of water it will bud, and bring forth branches like a plant. But man, he dies, is laid away. Indeed, he breathes his last. And where is he? As water disappears from the sea, and a river becomes parched and dries up, so man lies down and does not rise." He does not rise. Man lies down and he does not rise. Think not, go to a cemetery. All have lied down, none have arisen. There's only one. And so it is a truism that he says that we're like a water that is dried up. We're like a tree that has been cut down. Nothing can come of it. Nothing, really. Not man. Until something happens. Until something occurs. Verse 12b. Till the heavens are no more, they will not awake, nor be roused from their sleep. Let's read it in the positive. Man will rise when the heavens are no more. He will awake when the heavens are no more, and he will be roused from his sleep. This is important because Job identifies here four major understandings. One, the heavens will change, and we know that happens on the Day of Trumpets, as we have heard. There is a set time, which was exactly what we heard in the first message. Death is as sleep, and man will be awakened from that sleep. Four incredibly important points. He says in verse 13, he says, "Oh, that you would hide me in the grave." And he goes down into a low. "Oh, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time, and you would remember me." Verse 14, "If a man die, shall he live again?" Some translations do not make it a question, but a declarative statement. It says, "If a man die, he shall live again." He says, "If a man die, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service I will wait till my change comes. You shall call and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. For now you number my steps, but you do not watch over my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag and you cover my iniquity." So it's again talking about the resurrection where God forgives. He seals up in a bag. And when it talks about when you cover my iniquity, it literally means to plaster over. They cannot be seen. Could it hearken to the Day of Atonement, where God forgives and then he raises? Those that have repented have been forgiven of their sins and they will be raised. "I will wait till my change comes. You will call. Is that the trumpet? You will call. God will call. I will answer. And this is beautiful imagery here. It's almost as a friend calling another friend. Wake up. Wake up. And that could very easily be thought of as the trumpet in type. It's of a man who despairs. Job is. He despairs, but understands he must endure. Because one day, he says repeatedly, he will meet God when he has been changed. "All my life of hard service," verse 14, "I will wait till my change comes." As we heard in special music, this change must occur. We shall all be changed. It is a massive change. We cannot even describe it. The New Testament, as we'll hear later today, tries to describe it, but it's man's understanding. It's kind of like that famous prophet I often quote. We don't know what it is, for the prophet says, "You can't handle the truth." We wouldn't understand it. We wouldn't be able to take it all in. Oh, that's what you meant. We couldn't handle it. It does not yet appear what we shall be. We shall be like him. We see through a glass darkly. But when you think of change in the world, brethren, what comes to mind? What comes to mind? Technology, medicine, advances in communication. Everything around us has changed dramatically. Whether you're 15 years old or 75 years old, you have seen unbelievable change, and it is accelerating. The vehicle to change in the human being is the resurrection. But let me ask you another question. When we think of resurrection on the Day of Trumpets, what comes to, here's the hint, mind? What comes to mind? Let me quote from General Douglas MacArthur during the surrender in 1945. He said, "Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed. The problem basically is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescence, means an awakening, an improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all the material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of the spirit if we are to save the flesh." This was in 1945. General Omar Bradley in 1948 said this, "We have many men of science, too few men of God. We have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the Sermon on the Mount. The world has achieved brilliance without wisdom, power without conscience. Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. We know more about war than we know about peace. We know more about killing than we know about living." They give analogies of technology, how things have changed. I think God gives us analogies, and we have been given more than any other human era before us. Job talked about rivers and lakes and streams and trees. God gives us all this technology that we have. Do we realize that change in the world must also be change in us? Look at your phone. Look at the car you drive. How it has changed. Now look at man's heart and mind. As the two generals said, has it developed? Has it changed? Look at your own heart. Look at your own mind. Because it must be changed to be changed, ultimately. Will God, with you and me, need to make a massive leap of change and say, this one needs an incredible amount of work to get it where we need it to be in this one move of the resurrection, from physical to spiritual? Or it will be a shorter gap. And it's all a relative thing. Each of us is different. Job knew, finally, he had to change. It's a happy ending, the book of Job is. It truly is. But I would ask you this. Next time you use your phone, next time you climb into your car, I don't care what age it is, unless you're driving a 1908 Model T, next time you use one of the things around you, the advances in science and technology, those of you that have had medical breakthroughs in your life and have been healed with the aid of medicine and its advances, next time you think about that and you stare at your dashboard, you stare at your phone, think of change. But don't think of the physical change. Think of the spiritual change. Don't think of the physical change. Think of the internal change. You know, when you look at your phone, this is an interesting analogy. When you look at your phone, nothing's really changed because you can't see inside. When you look at your car, your dashboard, and all the dials and buttons and levers and sensors, you can't see any of them. They're all inside. God's trying to show us something. We need to change internally. I'm not going to give you 3 points, 10 points, 15 points. I'm not going to tell you what to do. If you're here on a Thursday at 11 o'clock in the morning, I don't think anybody stumbled in here. If you did, you're welcome. Stay for lunch. But I would imagine you're here for a reason. You know why you're here. The only thing I'll ask you to do, is to read the last chapter of the book of Job. It shows the result of a man waiting to be resurrected and to be changed. The hope that he has of not only physical, but of an internal change. You and I must change. We cannot change one another, and nor should we. Our job is to allow God and his Spirit as the principal agent. God will change us with our willingness. And, of course, the encouragement from one another. And if we have God's Spirit and we believe and have faith in what he can do to us both externally in a resurrection and internally, indeed, we will change. And one day, indeed, we will see God.